All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant live from the Philadelphia suburbs. We got a bunch to talk about today. We're going to talk about the Giants and Daniel Jones. We're going to talk about the New York Knickerbockers, who won a big game tonight. First game coming back from the break against the Washington Wizards. And we are also going to talk a little bit about the Arizona Wildcats. So let's get into it. The topic that everyone's talking about in the sports world right now, and I truly mean everyone, is the New York Giants have a massive decision to make with Daniel Jones. This is not something that we can take lightly. This is not something that we're going to joke around about. If you're a fan of the Giants, you enjoyed the success that Jones was able to have throughout the season. But you know that if you're Daniel Jones, what is it going to look like going forward with his performance? Is he going to be as good as he has been in the past? Or is he going to come up short like he had been with other coaches and other players around him? Because this was far and away the best season that he has had. So with Jones, overall, the Giants should franchise tag him. It's going to cost them $32.4 million if they franchise tag him, which is a lot of money, obviously, in the real world. But in the grand scheme of things of quarterbacks in the NFL, that franchise tag is not a lot of money. And it's going to be insulting to Jones because he's looking for that big money deal. And I don't blame him. You've heard numbers being thrown out there like $45 million a year. That's just a negotiating point. That's just where to start. But I want to take a minute here and touch on the fact that because of Dave Gettleman failing to put players around Jones to make him succeed, this led to the new regime of Shane and Daboll declining the fifth-year option. Gettleman hired absolute bozos to coach him. Joe Judge is the head coach. Garrett is the offensive coordinator. Freddie Kitchens is an offensive coordinator. Because of Gettleman hiring, again, absolute bozos, absolute clowns who know nothing about guiding successful quarterbacks out there, it led the Giants to be in this position where they ended up declining the most valuable thing in the NFL, which is a quarterback in which you're not paying them past the rookie deal. Or you're paying them on the rookie deal. You're not getting into that second contract. Add in the fact this year with Daniel Jones that he had nothing in terms of wide receivers to work with. If you give him that franchise tag, you give him a shot to show you next year that he can play. You're essentially hedging on the fact that, okay, we're going to have to pay him anyway. It's going to be a lot of money. But let's take this 1 year only at $32.4 million instead of getting into the mid-40s or even low-40s. And let him show you that he can play. Open up the full playbook. Don't just make it so that he won't make mistakes. Set him up so that he can show you all of his talents, including with his arm and his leg. Now, again, I want to keep highlighting with Jones. Ignore what you're hearing about $45 million. It's just a negotiation. And if you're going to bring him back, even on the franchise tag, you are a big believer in Daboll and his staff with Mike Kafka as the offensive coordinator to help develop him. I think it's essential that they bring him back on that franchise tag because I think, you know, it's a half measure. It's not a full step. But I also think that that can be good because you know how much the quarterback is going to get paid, you know, in the future. So if you have a year to get it slightly on the cheaper in the 30s instead of the 40s, I think that's a step that you have to take. Obviously, the best thing in the NFL that you can have is Patrick Mahomes or a Tom Brady in his prime, you know, one of the GOATs. Or you can have a quarterback a la Jalen Hurts, a la Russell Wilson 10 years ago, or Joe Burrow right now, where they're underpaid, making peanuts, again, in the grand scheme of NFL quarterback compensation. But with Jones, if you bring him back on that franchise tag, give him a chance to show you that he can play when he's not just trying only not to turn over the ball, but trying to make plays with his arm and, of course, his legs. I still say, though, the worst thing that you can do is overpay for a slightly above average quarterback. And I mean that on the long-term basis, because it's hard to find a situation in which that leads to a Super Bowl. The only one that I can think of is Matthew Stafford 2 years ago with the Rams. And that only worked out because they absolutely mortgaged the future. They traded first-round picks like they were going out of style. And, you know, you had to pay, you know, Peter to pay Paul or whatever last year because they only won five games. And it's probably going to continue to be bad because they mortgaged the future. Unless they trade off some stars like Donald and Ramsey. Another option with Jones. Again, I'm in favor of the exclusive franchise tag, but there's also the non-exclusive franchise tag. And if you argued that, I wouldn't go against that. But it's arguing that none of the pros last year that we saw from the Giants are transferable, meaning you're not in love with the head coach, which I think most people are. You're not in love with the way that Jones played, which I think most people are pretty satisfied. I know he only threw the 15 touchdowns. But you'd get two first-round picks from whatever team signs Jones, and we know there are plenty of teams who are desperate for a quarterback out there, like the Saints, like Carolina, like even your stadium mates, the Jets. So if you did that, at least you get the two first-round picks. You start over. You don't put yourself in, you know, the competition essentially for mediocrity like the Minnesota Vikings did with Kirk Cousins, like the Lions did with Stafford before they traded him to the Rams. And you're also essentially arguing that this year, this 2022 season, was similar to the 2016 Giants season in which they went to the playoffs. They lost in the first round, obviously, to the Packers that year. And that the wins that they had this year are similar to 2016 because they were mostly coming in close games, mostly coming in against beating bad teams. But the counter argument to that is that this year's Giants team, they were rebuilding. They were in absolute salary cap situations that were horrible. And they didn't make any big splashy signings. If you think back to that 2016 offseason, they bring in Snacks Harrison, an all-pro defensive lineman. They bring in Olivier Vernon, a very talented edge player. They bring in Janoris Jackrabbit Jenkins, a really talented cornerback. This Giants team was just trying to rebuild $40 million plus dollars in dead cap, plus a wide receiver that might have been $20 or $21 million in dead cap in Kenny Golladay because he didn't do a darn thing. Yeah, I know he scored a touchdown, I mean, in the last game against the Eagles, the last regular season game, but who cares? So if you're the Giants, franchise tag Jones, he's not going to want to play for it. But what other options does he have? Is he really going to sit out the year after having his first good year since 2019? No, he's not going to do that. This is all posturing. It's all negotiations. I think he understands. He's a smart guy, went to Duke. I think he understands that the franchise tag is obviously on the table. It's obviously something the Giants are mulling over. I think they want to have a long-term deal with him, but I think it's also tricky because of the fact that you don't want to be in the never-ending cycle of mediocrity in which you have a quarterback who plays good enough to keep his starting spot, but not good enough to put you over the top, not good enough to when you're down, you know, 10 points in a Super Bowl like Patrick Mahomes has done twice in the past 4 years, you bring your team right down the field and you go win the game and you come back. Not as bad or not good enough to pull a Joe Burrow from last year where you take your team all the way to the Super Bowl. And even though they didn't win, they come pretty darn close. They got the ball near midfield at the end of the game with a chance to win it. Because if you're in that level of mediocrity, you aren't going to expect anything better than maybe what the Giants did this year, which is win a playoff game. And they were ahead of schedule. But what you don't want to do is have them be in a situation in which you re-sign all these guys, and it turns out that because you won all the games that you won last year were close games or against bad teams, that you're not as good as you think. You have a serious regression. And then if you overpay the quarterback by bringing him in on a 42, 43, 44, whatever it is, million dollars a year, you have a quarterback that does not continue to develop. Now, I think most people, myself included, see Dable as a guy who's going to continue to help Jones develop. And I think you put Jones in that Aaron Rodgers dopey dark room retreat for 4 days and asked him, who do you want to be your quarterback? I think he'd come out and say Daniel Jones, because he knows that, you know, guys on the market are not going to be any better. Derek Carr is not going to be any better. Ryan Tannehill is really just an older version of Daniel Jones with the mobility. So I think that is the guy that they want to have. I think that Jones is the guy they want to have. But you just, again, you don't want to overpay for him, because it's going to be absolutely crucial and costly if you have a guy that's good enough to get you to, you know, what the Giants did this year, but can't keep going past that. And again, I'd argue, though, that Jones is on the upswing. I'd argue that he's got a chance to continue to get better with continued coaching. The Giants, though, they have to hit in the draft. They got to find some wide receivers. I haven't dived in or dove into the draft yet. I couldn't, you know, pinpoint it into what guys they need to bring in. But they need NFL-level receivers. It can't just be Darius Slayton, a guy you wanted to cut, Richie James, a guy you found on the scrap heap, Isaiah Hodgins, a guy you plucked off a practice squad. You need a legitimate, you know, stud player. Look at what the Eagles have. They trade for A.J. Brown. They draft Devonta Smith. They give Jalen Hurts, their guy, some big-time targets to go along with Dallas Goedert. Where is Daniel Jones's big-time targets? You don't have them. So give this guy a chance to continue to get better. Give him a chance to access the full offense, not just run plays to manage the game and to play smash mouth. All right, the next thing with the Giants, and again, I'm tagging Jones, and whatever the consequences are is what it is, because I think he's going to want to play. He's not going to want to sit out for the year. Saquon Barkley, what do you do? If I'm the Giants, I let him go. I have to let him go, and the reason is because paying running backs like they are worth more than they actually are is not a method for success either. We know Barkley's talented. We know he's marketable. We know he's a nice guy. We know he played his butt off and ran his butt off. He had games, you know, in which he was touching the ball over 30 times. But it's not a recipe for success. And if you, as a GM, Joe Shane, are good enough, you'll find someone who's 80% as good as Barkley, and you'll pay him, you know, 496 grand or whatever it is, and you won't have to pay a running back that much. We all have seen, you know, the graphic that's been on Twitter pretty much every year about the team that wins the Super Bowl and how much money they paid their leading rusher, and it's not much. You know, I think the highest one I can even think of was, like, without looking at it, was Percy Harvin when the Seahawks won it, and he wasn't even a running back. The Giants paid Ahmad Bradshaw pennies multiple seasons. You know, LeGarrette Blount's on there making virtual pennies in the, you know, grand scheme of things. You even look at the Chiefs this year with the South Jersey and Rutgers guy, Isaiah Pacheco. He's making 745 grand, you know, as a seventh round pick or whatever it was, 496, whatever it is. It's not millions of dollars. You know, the 49ers and McCaffrey came close to making the Super Bowl, and he's making $16 million, but it's not worth it to pay the running back. Go draft one. You know, there's been plenty of guys who've been seventh-round picks and have made impacts. I just mentioned Pacheco. I mentioned Bradshaw. So there's been guys that have been able to do it. You don't need to go crazy paying for the running back. This is not 1978. This is not 1984. Earl Campbell is not the, you know, the MVP of the league. You know, or a player similar to Earl Campbell, where they're just running through people. Go use the money, get Daniel Jones locked in if you think he's good enough, if he proves himself after you franchise tag him for this year, because you're going to regret paying the running back. It rarely, rarely ever works out to the level which you think it does, and you don't really need a high-paying running back if you want to get to the top of the sport. Is Barkley a talented player? Yeah, of course he is. He's beyond talented. Talented is an understatement. I remember back in 2019, I posted something on Facebook about, I said, Saquon Barkley can be as good as Barry Sanders, who's my favorite running back of all time, and it's just not going to matter as far as the wins and losses go. Again, the Giants, historically, when they've won their four Super Bowls, Bradshaw, Jacobs splitting the load, O.J. Anderson was a guy they kind of got at the end of his career from the Cardinals. You know, Rodney Hampton contributed on that 90 team also. You don't need to have these just amazing running backs making, you know, a ton of money. You can get it done without them. I mean, even the Eagles who made the Super Bowl this year, Miles Sanders, he's not on a big contract. Boston Scott, he's 5'5". He's a good enough complimentary player. You don't need to go crazy with the running backs. I know that's a hard pill to swallow. I know it's hard to, you know, present to the fan base, and I'm in that fan base. I went to 2 games this year. I've been a diehard Giant fan since 1990. So it's hard. It's a hard sell, but it's also a smart sell that you don't need to bring him back. All right. Next topic. How about those New York Knicks? They were down 19 points, like I mentioned earlier tonight, against Washington. They come back and win. Julius Randle, 46 points. The play that he makes, though, of the night was not so much with the scoring. It was an assist at the end of the game to Mitchell Robinson to put them up 4 points at the end of the game. Jalen Brunson was pretty much cold for most of the game, but he had 9 assists and only 1 turnover, and he made the go-ahead bucket at the end of the game, a crazy scoop shot over Porzingis. But let's talk about the Knicks, you know, from a whole season aspect and not so much tonight. It was a good win tonight. Anytime you're down 19 on the road, you come back to win, it's excellent. But the biggest surprise for the Knicks, and this is no surprise almost in a way, is Jalen Brunson. His last 25 games before tonight, I don't have the tonight stats factored in, but he was scoring 27.8 points per game, 44.9% from 3, 50% from the floor, 6 assists, 4 boards a game. He and the basket he made tonight really highlighted his ability to be crafty, his ability to drive the basketball. Again, he didn't finish a lot tonight at the rim, but he is very high up there on drives per game and the fact that it leads to points, not just him scoring, but when he drives, it helps the Knicks win. According to some stats I got here from NBA University, a great Twitter follow, he's in the 100th percentile of drives per 75 possessions. He has an A rating in his scoring gravity. I'm not even sure what that means, but that sounds real nice. And he's in the 99th percentile of passing efficiency. So he's doing a great job. And in just, you know, the big thing about Brunson in the offseason was his contract. Oh, you know, how could you sign him to an over $100 million a year? But I don't know about you. I want to pay a guy what he's going to do and not what he has done. And I think with Brunson, they were able to do exactly that. You weren't paying him for past production as he comes to a new team. You didn't even have to trade anything for him. Yeah, they lost, you know, a second round pick for allegedly tampering. But I mean, the fact that his dad's on the staff, Leon Rose, the president of the Knicks, Leon Rose's kid is Brunson's age. And so, I mean, there, you know, was some familial ties or a lot of familial ties, I should say there. But you're paying him for what he's going to do. And even you stretch out that contract looking in 2025, 2026, he's going to be making a shade less than $25 million at $24.96 million, while Damian Lillard's going to be making $58 million. I don't know about you, but give me Brunson at that number all day, even though, again, people thought it was an absolutely absurd contract in the offseason. This contract is paying dividends. I don't know how Dallas let him out of the building. He's been the biggest surprise for the Knicks. And quite frankly, if you said there's a guy in the NBA averaging 27.8 points per game, 44.9% from 3, 50% from the floor with 6 assists and 4 boards, that's pretty similar to numbers that Steph Curry has put up. I know that's only over his past 25 games, but if you look at his full year numbers, it's not that much worse. I think he's getting like almost 24 points a game coming into tonight. So essentially, over the past 25 games prior to tonight with Brunson, you're getting a poor man Steph Curry. All right, the biggest disappointment has got to be RJ Barrett for this Knicks team. Yeah, he's averaging almost 20 points a game, but 32% from three-pointers is not going to cut it. And he hit over 40% 2 years ago on slightly less attempts from three. So, you know, you got to take smarter shots. Now, I'm not a huge advanced analytics guys, but I watch some YouTube clips and listen to guys talk about the NBA, and they repeatedly bring up this stat called box plus minus, and essentially it's how you're impacting the game and creating offense. He had last year a negative 1.6 box minus. This year it's down to negative 3.0. You don't want to be negative. You want to be positive. So essentially it contributes to the fact that he's contributing offense twice as poorly as he did last year. Now, if you look at a guy who's averaging almost as many points a game this year in the NBA, Paolo Banchero, the number one pick from the Magic, he's averaging, like I said, about the same number of points, but he has twice the plus the box plus minus, even though it's also negative. You got my dog Mello here barking in the background. Mello, the same dog that is named after the former New York Knick great. And yes, I said New York Knick great. But if you look at, you know, Pablo Banchero, he's got, again, twice as good of a box plus minus as RJ Barrett. And I know advanced metrics, they're usually not pretty kind to rookies. And again, it's his is negative also. But if you look at another guy, Domantas Sabonis on the Kings, and it's similar team in the Knicks in the fact that they're doing much better, and the Kings are even doing better than the Knicks, but doing better than people thought. He's got a box plus minus of 5.4, positive 5.4, that is. And his effective field goal percentage is 62.9% compared to RJ Barrett. Effective field goal percentage is basically weighing every shot as if it was a three-pointer. So all 20-point-per-game scorers are not necessarily created equal. That's just the point of bringing up Paolo Banchero and Domantas Sabonis, because RJ Barrett, basically, I bring all these stats in to say he's got to work on his efficiency, and you got to do better than 32% from three if you're going to be a shooting guard. Now, the biggest bounce-back player, and this is great timing, is Julius Randle. Told you about the 46 points tonight, but again, his biggest play was an assist, and he hit seven threes tonight. But he's going back to that box plus-minus. He's at 4.1, which is doing better than last year. And he's got even more points per game, especially if you factor in tonight, than he did in 2020, 2021. He's averaging 24.8 points per game this year compared to 24.1. So he's definitely bouncing back. His three-point shooting is slightly better than last year, still less than 34%, definitely nowhere near that 41% in 2020, 2021. But he's doing a better job of taking good shots, and that's because Brunson is setting him up to do so. He's gone back, Julius Randle, to being underpaid. He was overpaid last year. He is definitively, without a doubt, underpaid, especially if you play the way that you did tonight, getting 46 points and carrying the team to a dub against Washington. Now, again, I'm going to bring in some comparisons here on the money side. John Collins makes slightly less than him, the John Collins on Atlanta, who I like. He's a good player. I think he's pretty good at stretching the floor, even for a big, or he has been in the past. He's making $200,000 less than him, and he's only averaging 13 points a game. Draymond Green is one spot in front of him if you look at the average annual value of the salary factoring in this year. And he's making $50,000 more than Julius Randle, and he's only getting 8 points per game. So, again, if you throw in these two guys making about the same money as him, give or take $100,000 on either side, he is performing way better, especially scoring the basketball. We know Draymond's not much of a scorer, but, you know, that's, you know, the where he's sitting, where each guy's sitting on the salary really made my argument convenient. All right, so Daniel Jones, hope the Giants franchise tag him. Hope they look to improve around them. You got to say goodbye to Barkley. It's going to be painful. And the Knicks, they've been a fun watch this season. They're bouncing back. Thibodeau, I'm glad they did not fire him. Got to be patient sometimes, especially with the lack of success that the Knicks have had. You got to be patient. Brunson has done, paid dividends. Randle bouncing back has been amazing. And RJ Barrett's got to do a little bit better. And we'll have this team, right where we want to be. They're in the top six. They're not in the playoff. They're not in the playoffs yet, obviously, but if the season ended, they wouldn't be in the play-in, which is good. So we'll see with the Knicks where they go. But big win tonight, coming back from 19 down. Obviously, I'm pumped up about that for more than one reason. First game out of the All-Star break, but obviously other reasons there too, if you catch the drift. All right, Schloss Rant live from the Philly suburbs. We will see everyone later. Have a good one.